Welcome to Habits for High Performance. Once again, this is Jen Verheeren of Cadence Coaching. The word habit has a couple of definitions that I could find. One, a settled or regular practice, especially one that's hard to give up. The other, an automatic reaction to a specific situation or an addiction. Ugh, I hate these definitions. They suggest that habits are irresistible and that we don't have much agency in forming them or changing them. And you know that I am not on board with that. So go ahead and pick a couple of good habits you want to develop that will help you achieve one of your goals. These could be lifestyle habits, mental skills habits, health and fitness habits, whatever. Decide what they are and start doing them. Okay, check. We'll see you next module. Okay, we know that that's not going to happen. If it was as easy as that to establish good habits, we'd all weigh our ideal weight, ride 6 days a week, run marathons every weekend, and have already written the great American novel. But as you know, it's not that easy, so it warrants some attention from us. First off, maintaining good habits is not just about having more self-discipline or stronger willpower. Okay, it's not just about having self-discipline or willpower. You are not lazy or undisciplined. You are human. I feel that it's useful to understand why, as human beings, we tend to procrastinate and put things off, even when they are super important to us. Generally, bad habits are easy to maintain. They give us some sort of immediate gratification, even though they're usually detrimental in the long run. Good habits are hard to maintain because there's usually a higher cost in the moment, but a payoff in the long run. Your lizard brain will always seek pleasure and avoid pain. If we all let our primordial part of our brains make all the decisions, we would likely still be living in caves. Instead, we all have a prefrontal cortex. This is the part of the brain that's in charge of planning and cognition, expressing personality, decision-making, and moderating social behavior. So basically doing important, on-purpose stuff. The prefrontal cortex is the part of your brain that allows you to override your lizard brain and make decisions that are in your long-term best interest. All this means is that it takes a high level of commitment over time to keep a good habit going. It often means that you'll need to do your thing despite not feeling like it and despite the lame stories that your inner critic is going to keep telling you. One of my mottos is action precedes inspiration. It's common for us as humans to think that we need to wait to feel inspired to get some important task or activity done. We have the misguided notion that we need to feel particularly moved or empowered in order to get into action and do something creative or constructive. I am telling you right now, though, that this is not the case. It is action that fuels inspiration, and the resistance you feel to getting into action or keeping a good habit going at times is a normal part of the human condition. So before I ask you to commit to a habit or two, I'd like to talk a bit about resistance and procrastination with the idea that this won't be just another time that you set out to do that thing and then not do it. So why do we all experience procrastination and resistance? Action, by its very nature, is creative. No matter what you're doing, you are bringing something new into existence. Do you ever wonder why there are things that you know you want to do, things you know would help move you towards your goals, and yet you just cannot seem to get them done? There are times that a mental block can feel almost tangible, like you could just lean forward and bang your head up against a real wall. A few years ago, I read this awesome little book called The War of Art, Break Through the Blocks and Win Your Inner Creative Battles, written by Stephen Pressfield. Pressfield is a writer, obviously, I suppose, and he writes about his belief that we all have two lives, the life we live and the unlived life within us. It's his contention that what stands between those two lives is resistance with a capital R. Okay, so I'm going to quote him for a second here. He writes, Have you ever brought home a treadmill and let it gather dust in the attic? Ever quit a diet, a course of yoga, a meditation practice? Have you ever bailed out on a call to embark on a spiritual practice, dedicate yourself to a humanitarian calling, commit your life to the service of others? Have you ever wanted to be a mother, a doctor, an advocate for the weak and helpless? To run for office, crusade for the planet, campaign for world peace, or to preserve the environment? Late at night, have you experienced a vision of the person you might become, the work you could accomplish, the realized being you were meant to be? Are you a writer who doesn't write, a painter who doesn't paint, an entrepreneur who never starts a venture? Then you know what resistance is. As powerful as is our soul's call to realization, so potent are the forces of resistance arrayed against it. He goes on to say that any act that rejects immediate gratification in favor of long-term growth, health, or integrity can elicit resistance. Things like pursuing a creative calling or launching a project or staying on a diet or overcoming a bad habit. Following through on an act of moral courage or taking a principled stand in the face of adversity, these things all invite resistance. At times, it can seem that resistance comes from outside ourselves. We find it in our spouses, our partners, our jobs, our kids, and our schedules, even in our horses. The truth is, though, that it comes from within. And I'd like you to consider that, like your inner critic, resistance is not you. Resistance, which is interchangeable with your inner critic voice, will tell you almost anything to keep you from taking action, and it will reason with you like a lawyer. Though it is in you, it is not unique to you. It is not personal. Resistance is in all of us, and we can all fight it. If we couldn't, there would be no War and Peace, no Romeo and Juliet, and there would be no Eiffel Tower. Resistance is fear. Pressfield writes, "We fear discovering that we are more than we think we are, more than our parents, children, teachers think we are. We fear that we actually possess the talent that our still small voice tells us, that we actually have the guts, the perseverance, the capacity. We fear that we truly can steer our ship, plant our flag, reach our promised land. We fear this because if it's true, then we become estranged from all we know." Think about that. It is only by going professional that we win our private battles with resistance. In this program, I'm asking you to show up, follow through, and take action no matter what. If you stay committed for the long haul, you will beat resistance at its own game. Going pro is not about doing something for money. In fact, the more you love your goal or your writing or your art or your calling, and the more important it is to the evolution of your soul, the more resistance you will feel facing it. Going pro is about the attitude that it produces. It's about, as Pressfield says, the hardcore, hard-headed, hard-hat state of mind that shows up for work despite rain or snow or dark of night and slugs it out day after day. So I'm asking you to go pro. Consider that your goal is important to the evolution of your soul. Show up, hard hat in hand, every day. Tolstoy had 13 kids and he still wrote War and Peace. You can let resistance continue to keep you stalled out, or you can liberate yourself from it by acting first and expecting inspiration later. If you are someone who feels like you're already constantly in action, but you're still not where you'd like to be, know that resistance can keep you very busy circling around your real work. Take advantage of the performance project to get to the heart of what matters to you the most so you can identify the busy work that resistance assigns you and liberate yourself from it. So here are the concrete things that I'd like you to think about doing when it comes to your habits. Number one, identify the trigger for not keeping your good habit. Pinpoint whatever it is that usually sidetracks you or keeps you from doing what you know you want to do. For many of us, it's getting on Facebook for just a sec or taking a quick look at your email, catching up on the news for a minute, or sitting down to take a short break. For a lot of us, it's staying cozy in bed for just one more snooze cycle. All of these short, quick little things can end up eating away literally hours out of your days. They're triggers, And they're examples of what I call leaky holes. You can feel really busy all the time, but not be getting much done because time is leaking out all over the place. Once you identify the trigger for not doing your thing, decide what you can do to change it. You want to intercept this pattern before willpower is required to shift gears. So this may mean changing your routine, putting your phone in another room with the alarm set, using an online app to block your social media access, whatever. I've learned there is always something you can do to eliminate the trigger and find one that gets you into your good habit and helps you stay there. So brainstorm. Number two, acknowledge the emotion that might be stopping you. Sometimes there's subtle discomfort or fear or sadness or whatever that creeps in and keeps you from doing what you want to do. Honestly, most of the time, all it takes is noticing it and naming it, like we've talked about, and you'll be able to get past it. So the next time you feel resistance with a capital R, show up, ask yourself what emotion you're really feeling. It doesn't really matter what it's about. Why is less important than what and how? Number three, put structures or accountability in place that make it easy for you to keep the agreements you make with yourself. So instead of just thinking you need to pound the screw harder with your hammer, strategize. Think about what you could do to set yourself up for success and make your thing as easy as possible to do. Maybe you enlist a friend or family member to support you. Maybe you take your clothes along with you so you can go straight to the barn. Maybe you prioritize yourself in your own schedule. Whatever you can do to make keeping your commitment to yourself even a little bit easier, it will go a long way toward winning the battle against resistance. There is truly magic in making a new start. I'm going to leave you this session with a quote. W.H. Murray was a Scottish mountaineer who spent 3 years as a prisoner of war. While he was imprisoned, Murray wrote a book called Mountaineering in Scotland. The first draft of the work was written on the only paper that he had, rough toilet paper. The manuscript was found and destroyed by the Gestapo. Murray's response to this loss was to start over again, even though his physical condition was so poor from near starvation that he believed he would never climb again. And the book was actually finally published in 1947. He wrote, "Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans, that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issues from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents and meetings and material assistance, which no man could have dreamed would have come his way. Whatever you can do or dream you can do, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Begin it now." Okay, so this is it. Remember what Aristotle said, that we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, therefore, is not an act, but a habit.